the Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Luke Groom's behind the console this morning. Jane Houghton and our producer. And if you kind of checked out on Friday night, maybe you had a quiet dinner and didn't pay too much attention to the news, you've missed two significant stories breaking overnight. And we'll get to those in just a second. Obviously, the big story that everybody's been covering over the past couple of days have been the Trump rally and the John Bolton book, and we'll have a look at both of those stories from a number of different perspectives this morning. That rally proceeding tonight in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and we'll actually take you to Tulsa and talk with Russell Mills, who's a reporter there, and get the very latest from the ground in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where the Trump supporters are gathering already. Some were there as early as Tuesday to get in line for the event tonight at the BOK Center in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And again, we'll go live to Tulsa shortly. But two stories breaking, one here in Washington last night. You may be familiar with a statue down in Judiciary Square in Washington. That's right around 3rd and D Street, and it's right in the complex where the police headquarters is. There are courts there, and there was a Confederate general, Albert Pike, and it is the only monument in Washington to a Confederate general. All of the other Civil War monuments in Washington are to Union generals. And there had been a lot of controversy about that statue. Activists and city officials had been calling for its removal for a good while, but it was kind of hung up in the bureaucracy. It required congressional approval to remove that monument. It was authorized to be constructed in 1898. Well, last night, protesters bypassed the official process. Right around 11 o'clock last night, the 11-foot bronze statue of Albert Pike was toppled. It was pulled to the ground, wrapped in ropes and chains, then set on fire. That was last night, about 11 o'clock, at 3rd and D Streets in Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. police on hand, but took no action to stop the protesters and to stop the toppling of that statue of Albert Pike last night. The other story you may have missed, if you didn't pay too much attention to the news last night, Attorney General William Barr released a statement around 9:30 or so and said that Jeffrey Berman, the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, would be stepping down and that the president is nominating Jay Clayton, the chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission, to succeed Berman as that U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, and that's based in Manhattan. Jeffrey Berman has overseen the prosecutions of associates of President Trump, including Trump's former personal attorney, Michael Cohen. He also brought the grand jury indictments against associates of the president's current personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani. Well, that was the Attorney General's statement that Berman was stepping down. Well, a short time later, Jeffrey Berman fired off his own announcement denying Attorney General Barr's statement. Here's what Berman had to say. I learned in a press release from the Attorney General tonight that I was stepping down as U.S. Attorney. I have not resigned and have no intention of resigning my position, to which I was appointed by the judges of the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York. I will step down when a presidentially appointed nominee is confirmed by the Senate. Until then, our investigations will move forward without delay or interruption. Now, Attorney General Barr's press release had indicated that President Trump has already appointed an interim replacement for Berman, and Barr said that's effective July 3rd. Craig Carpentino is the current U.S. attorney for the District of New Jersey. He would take over until Clayton is confirmed. Barr thanked Berman for his service, adding, With tenacity and savvy, Jeff has done an excellent job leading one of our nation's most significant U.S. attorney's offices, achieving many successes on consequential civil and criminal matters. Nice words there from Attorney General Barr, but Berman says he's not going anywhere. We'll see how that one plays out. We do have a lot to cover on the Saturday morning update, and we will be joined by Russell Mills down in Tulsa very shortly. Then we'll chat with Jennifer Harper from the Washington Times, and we'll be taking a look at some of the poll numbers floating around the country and how people are feeling about the president and coronavirus. And that's coming up with Jennifer Harper. Then we'll talk with Gordon Chang. You may have seen Hong Kong, China stepping up the crackdown on Hong Kong. What does that mean? And what does that mean for U.S. policy? Also, progress on the China trade deal this week. And you may have seen the video of North Korea blowing up the headquarters where North Korea and South Korea were trying to negotiate closer relations. North Korea blew it up. What's behind that? And also, the emerging power of Kim Jong-un's sister. Is that indicative that Kim Jong-un may not be in good health? Well, we'll ask Gordon Chang those questions this morning. John Gizzi will join us, and we'll get John Gizzi's read on the John Bolton book. And, also we'll be talking to John about the rally tonight in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Jim Trusty will join us. Of course, he's an attorney with IFRA Law. He is the former head of the Crime and Gang section of the U.S. Department of Justice. Jim will bring us up to speed on the legal action around the Bolton book. Department of Justice trying to stop the distribution of the book. It's been basically printed. It's been sent to bookstores, but it doesn't come out until next week. The DOJ is trying to stop the distribution and sale of the book because of concerns over confidential and national security issues. There was a hearing yesterday. Jim Trusty will bring us up to date on what happened in that hearing and what may be happening next. We'll talk with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer about those national security issues, and we'll also talk with K.T. McFarland about the Trump management style, which K.T. outlines in her book in a much different light than John Bolton outlines in his book. So an interesting contrast, and we'll do that with K.T. McFarland coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. So we do have a lot to cover on the Saturday morning update, but first a check of the traffic and weather. And we're always joined by Michelle Murray in the WMAL Traffic Center.
Traffic looks great in Virginia if you're riding on 95 between Woodbridge and the Capitol Beltway. There are no crashes, and 395 is in great shape between the Capitol Beltway, continuing your ride toward the 14th Street Bridge. Again, there aren't any crashes to bring to you right now. 66, good, Gainesville to the Capitol Beltway, and 270, you're great out of Germantown, head toward the lane divide. On 95, leaving the Capitol Beltway, traffic looks good. It's the southbound side that's a little bit sluggish with a little bit of volume. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Some patchy fog this morning, but that'll burn off pretty quickly. Expect partly sunny skies, scattered afternoon storms, and some of those may contain some heavy rainfall. Highs today in the lower 80s. Tonight, storms will come to an end. Partly cloudy, patchy fog, lows in the 60s to near 70 degrees. For your Sunday, Father's Day, partly cloudy skies, isolated afternoon storms, highs in the mid-80s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
66 degrees in the nation's capital, 617 on the Saturday morning update. It's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Happy Father's Day weekend. I'm Rick Fowler. President Trump will be in Tulsa, Oklahoma tonight, his first rally since the onset of the coronavirus lockdown. And Russell Mills joins us. He is an anchor and reporter at KRMG Radio in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And Russell, thank you for being with us on Saturday morning update.
Glad to help out.
Preparations throughout the week, Russell, for the president's rally tonight. And tell us a little bit about the setting. Tell us about the BOK Center and what the scene looks like there.
Well, the BOK Center is an arena, fairly modern, rather modernistic looking. It's hosted a lot of concerts. Actually, U2 kicked off their national U.S. tour here a couple of years ago. So it's very well-known, very successful venue. It holds roughly 19,000 people. And I'd say on the streets surrounding that area, I saw maybe a couple thousand people, a lot of folks gathered, but we had folks camping outside as early as Tuesday morning to get into this presidential rally. And we were told by our governor, Kevin Stitt, that they had nearly a million requests for tickets. Now, I've heard people saying we may see 100,000 people in Tulsa. I don't believe that going to be the case. I spoke with a woman Friday afternoon who told me she was able to book a room for that night in a downtown hotel. So clearly we don't have 100,000 extra people in town. I don't think a hotel room would be available. And I didn't see evidence of it. There wasn't that much traffic downtown. Now, I suppose we could have people coming in for tonight. And I do know that there are a lot of people from around the country. I spoke to people from L.A., from Baltimore, from Orlando, Florida.
We had heard there was a curfew that was to be imposed. What is the latest on how that curfew played out?
Well, originally, the curfew had been requested by the Secret Service, and the mayor of Tulsa issued an emergency order to that effect because they had what they said was credible information that people would be coming from outside of town specifically to cause trouble. Now, we heard from the city that the Secret Service had said the situation had changed. They no longer felt that a curfew was necessary, and as a result, our mayor rescinded that curfew, and it is no longer in effect through the rest of the weekend.
Have you seen indications of protesters who would be coming in an anti-Trump capacity?
Well, I'm sure there are some potential anti-Trump protesters here in Oklahoma. You know, not everybody is a huge fan of the president. We've had reports of people coming in from out of town specifically to protest. I've not seen that with my own eyes, and I do not believe that there are any credible reports of busloads of people coming to Tulsa. So I don't think there's anything that organized, if that makes sense. But as far as predicting what's going to develop today in the hours leading up to and following the rally, I have absolutely no idea. And, you know, I'm not going to guess. Personally, I think Tulsa will probably remain peaceful. And as far as the weather is concerned, the rain could definitely create a problem. It could literally dampen spirits, and it is expected to rain heavily today, even a possibility of storms. So we'll have to see what develops with the weather as well as what's going to develop there at the BOK Center.
Tell us a little bit about the security around the venue.
They have erected fencing in a block, that's about six square block area surrounding BOK. The fences are about 9 feet tall. They appear to be made of metal. They're black. I've not seen anything quite like that deployed before in Tulsa, at least not at a, you know, at a venue like this or at a political event. But, yeah, it's completely surrounded. And then the streets in the area are blocked off with jersey barriers, if you're familiar with those, the big concrete things. And plenty of police officers. Of course, police headquarters is literally right there, and the downtown headquarters. The sheriff's office is literally maybe a quarter of a mile away. And then I saw an area where that looked like a possible deployment of some National Guard troops, and we do know that the governor has requested the National Guard to have 250 soldiers on hand in Tulsa tonight for the rally.
We saw some images of businesses being boarded up. Tell us a little about that.
Yeah, and I took a couple photos today I never expected to take, and that was photographs of a Quick Trip boarded up near, I guess that'd be about 18th and Denver, just south of the area that we're talking about. That is a highly successful sort of convenience store chain that's based here in Tulsa. They never close their doors, not for tornadoes or anything else, and in this particular case, they decided to go ahead and board up several stores. It's interesting to note that when all the trouble happened in Ferguson, Missouri, if you'll remember, a brand new Quick Trip got completely torched in that situation, and the company, you know, may have taken a lesson from that and decided if there's even the risk of civil unrest, they're going to prefer to be safe than sorry. And that's how the company described it. They just felt it was more important to protect their customers and their employees' safety because of the possibility, you know, that there could be confrontations in the streets in that area. Other businesses have also boarded up. Some have not.
Russell Mills, anchor and reporter at KRMG Radio in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Thank you for the preview of the president's visit and rally tonight in Tulsa.
My pleasure. Thanks.
It's 6:24. It's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. And coming up next, it's the latest on Major League Baseball and getting out to the movie theaters during the summer. We'll tell you. Stay with us.
Have you met a true hero lately? Hi, it's Jonathan Cotton with the Good Feet Store, and I've been thinking about heroes that I work with. Take Reese, for example, one of our store managers. Reese served in Afghanistan and sustained significant injuries when his MRAP vehicle was disabled by an IED. He was told he would never walk without a cane. However, after he was fitted with Good Feet arch supports, he was able to walk without a limp and without a cane. His service as a manager is exemplary, and we are proud to have Reese on the Good Feet team. The story doesn't stop there, though. Reese fell in love and got married to a beautiful nurse named Erica. And during this pandemic, who was on the front lines taking care of COVID-19 patients? You guessed it, Erica. Heroes tend to stick together. The Good Feet Store says thank you to all of our heroes. We especially say thank you to the heroes among us, such as Reese and Erica, for the many ways they have served us all. Come by the Good Feet Store and see what Good Feet Arch Supports can do for you. You never know. You might bump into a hero.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard. This summer, we'll be traveling at an altitude of approximately 2 feet in a brand new Nissan. We invite you to enjoy the available panoramic views, premium seats in all rows, and connected tech while avoiding baggage fees, layovers, and neck pillows. So fasten your seatbelts and enjoy nonstop routes to summer, because the best way to travel this season is in a new Nissan. And now is the best time to buy at the Nissan 4th of July sales event.
Save up to $3,500 on the 2020 Nissan Rogue, or get 0% APR financing on 13 models.
Nissan, innovation that excites.
For well-qualified buyers, $3,500 on 2020 Rogue consists of $3,000 cash back and $500 bonus cash. Available on purchase. Must purchase from new dealer stock. See dealer for financing details. Call 1-888-858-8319 for offer and safety information details. Offers end 7-6-2020.
Happy Father's Day weekend to you from WMAL. And one neat things that most kids like to do with their dads is go out to a baseball game. Well, could be a big problem for Major League Baseball. The Associated Press is reporting this morning that, according to a source, a person familiar with the decision, the report is that Major League Baseball is closing all of its spring training sites over concerns about the coronavirus pandemic. The person spoke Friday night on the condition of an anonymity because there was no official announcement yet. But earlier in the day, the Philadelphia Phillies said five players had tested positive for COVID-19 this week at the team's spring training complex. At least four teams in Florida and Arizona had already closed their camps. The move came while Major League Baseball owners and players tried to negotiate a deal to start the season. They had hoped to begin a second round of spring training by next weekend. And a lot of question marks about the movie theaters. Now, the nation's largest movie theater chain changed its position on mask wearing less than a day after the company became a target on social media. Now, they had said it would defer to local governments on the issue. AMC Theaters CEO Adam Aaron said Friday that its theaters will require patrons to wear masks upon reopening, which will begin in July. AMC Theaters, not the first to say it would defer to officials on the mask issue, but it hit a nerve for many on Thursday, and hashtag boycott AMC quickly became a trending topic on Twitter. And another COVID-19 related note, Smith & Wesson Brands, the gun maker, their fourth quarter revenue climbed by more than 37% to $197 million as consumer demand for firearms increased in March. That's the period when the virus, of course, lockdowns were starting in the U.S., Japan, and Vietnam have agreed to partially lift travel bans and ease restrictions step by step as a way to reopen economic and bilateral exchanges between the two Asian nations. And Comcast is extending free access to 1.5 million Xfinity Wi-Fi hotspots to anyone who needs them, including non-customers, through the end of the year. Those notes on COVID-19. 6:29, it is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. We'll take a look at the news next, then we're back with Jennifer Harper and Gordon Chang.
Whether you're buying a home or trying to lower your interest rate, finding the right mortgage company is often stressful and time-consuming. Listen this Saturday to the Mortgage Radio Show at 1 p.m. and now on Sunday at 3 p.m. The Mortgage Radio Show is your trusted source for mortgage news. Every weekend, host Teresa Strasser and Sean Metter will give you helpful tools for finding the right mortgage product to fit your needs. So tune in to WMAL every Saturday at 1 p.m. or Sunday at 3 p.m. for the latest rates and information from Network Capital Funding here on WMAL.
In the news at 6:30, here in Washington, protesters have toppled the only statue of a Confederate general in the nation's capital. Happened about 11 o'clock last night. It was set on fire. The cheering demonstrators jumped up and down as the 11-foot bronze statue of Albert Pike, wrapped in chains, fell backward and landed in a pile of dust. Protesters then set a bonfire and stood around while chanting, "No justice, no peace, and no racist police." Police were on the scene, but did not intervene. President Trump quickly tweeted about the toppling, calling out D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser and writing, quote, "The D.C. police are not doing their job as they watched a statue be ripped down and burned," end of quote. The Justice Department moving abruptly Friday to oust Jeffrey Berman, the U.S. attorney in Manhattan, overseeing key prosecutions of President Trump's allies and an investigation of Rudy Giuliani. Justice Department said he was stepping down. Berman came back shortly thereafter and said he was refusing to leave his post and his ongoing investigations would continue. It's a standoff that sets off an extraordinary clash between the Justice Department and one of the nation's top districts. They've tried major mob and terror cases over the years in the Southern District of New York, also likely to deepen the tensions between the Justice Department and congressional Democrats, who have pointedly accused Barr of politicizing the agency. President Trump will be in Tulsa, Oklahoma tonight. It's a 19,000-seat venue, but officials are expecting a crowd of nearly 100,000 people in downtown Tulsa. President Trump will speak tonight inside the BOK Center, as well as at an outdoor stage. The gathering of supporters and detractors for President Trump is growing larger ahead of that rally. Now, the Oklahoma Supreme Court on Friday rejected a request to require everyone attending the rally to wear a face mask and maintain social distancing inside the arena. Trump campaign does say that they will be handing out hand sanitizers and masks to people entering the arena, and they will have the option to wear them or not. Tens of thousands are expected to attend the rally outside of the arena. China says the disputed border region where Chinese and Indian troops engaged in a deadly brawl this week falls entirely within China. The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson said Friday that the Galwan Valley area is located on the Chinese side of the border. It was established following a war between the Asian giants in 1962, resulted in an uneasy truce. Indian officials did not immediately respond to China's claim on the Galwan Valley, but the prime minister said in a meeting with opposition leaders Friday that there had been no intrusions into the area in Indian territory. Two sides continuing to use military and diplomatic channels to attempt to reduce tensions. It's 6:33, time for a check of the traffic and weather on WMAL.
The start on the Maryland Beltway, Woodrow Wilson Bridge looks great. From that point, head toward Largo and 50. No crashes at 50 if you're going to make the early run to the beaches and head over toward the Bay Bridge. No delays at all. However, on the eastbound side of 50 at Kenilworth Avenue, there was that road work in the right lane. On 95 and 295, going between the Capitol Beltway and up toward Baltimore, it looks like all earlier crashes cleared. 270 looks good out of Germantown toward the lane divide. 66, no delays right now out of Gainesville to get to the Capitol Beltway. 95 in great shape between Dale City and the Springfield Interchange. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Some patchy fog this morning, but that'll burn off pretty quickly. Expect partly sunny skies, scattered afternoon storms, and some of those may contain some heavy rainfall. Highs today in the lower 80s. Tonight, storms will come to an end. Partly cloudy, patchy fog, lows in the 60s to near 70 degrees. For your Sunday, Father's Day, partly cloudy skies, isolated afternoon storms, highs in the mid-80s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
66 degrees at 634 on WMAL.
Have you met a true hero lately? Hi, it's Jonathan Cotton with the Good Feet Store, and I've been thinking about heroes that I work with. Take Reese, for example, one of our store managers. Reese served in Afghanistan and sustained significant injuries when his MRAP vehicle was disabled by an IED. He was told he would never walk without a cane. However, after he was fitted with Good Feet arch supports, he was able to walk without a limp and without a cane. His service as a manager is exemplary, and we are proud to have Reese on the Good Feet team. The story doesn't stop there, though. Reese fell in love and got married to a beautiful nurse named Erica. And during this pandemic, who was on the front lines taking care of COVID-19 patients? You guessed it, Erica. Heroes tend to stick together. The Good Feet store says thank you to all of our heroes. We especially say thank you to the heroes among us, such as Reese and Erica, for the many ways they have served us all. Come by the Good Feet store and see what Good Feet Arch Supports can do for you. You never know. You might bump into a hero.
Did your son struggle with the online learning our area schools offered? Let's be honest. Asking mom or dad to help explain physics isn't the best way to learn. But there is a better way. Fork Union Military Academy, located in Central Virginia. Fork Union is the nation's leading college preparatory military boarding school, offering top-notch academics and athletics for young men in grades 7 through 12. At Fork Union, they emphasize core values like respect, integrity, faith, character, and discipline. Right now, they are accepting a limited number of fall enrollments with single room occupancy for a safe on-campus educational learning experience guaranteed to help your son achieve success. For decades, Fork Union has proven that smaller classes, personal accountability, and mandatory study periods work to help your son achieve his full potential. Most impressive about Fork Union, 100% of their graduating seniors gain college acceptance. For fall enrollment details and to learn about their enhanced safety protocols, visit ForkUnion.com. That's ForkUnion.com.
105.9 FM, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It is the Saturday Morning Update. Happy Father's Day weekend to you. Jennifer Harper joins us. She writes inside the Beltway of the Washington Times, and a good morning to you.
Good morning, and happy Father's Day weekend to everybody.
A lot of media attention on Tulsa, Oklahoma tonight as President Trump starts the first of his rallies since the beginning of the COVID-19 virus. And fascinating media coverage in the run-up.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Have you ever seen the media more hysteria prone as we do this week? In fact, the countdown on kind of media overcoverage of this event has been going on for days and days, and certainly as the hours tick by today, we'll see more of it. The media has cast the Trump rally as a life-threatening event, for real. That's kind of the type of language that they're using. For example, let's look at Reuters said in Tulsa, fears that the Trump rally may worsen racial unrest and spread of coronavirus. The New York Times reported that epidemiologists are envisioning a worst-case scenario for viral spread. They say that the president himself is endangering his fans. It just goes on and on. I cited a whole lot of these things this week, but we don't need to go all over them at this time. But the very interesting thing is that all of this terrible coverage could very well have an unintended consequence. And this I found to be a very interesting thought, because you and I and our listeners know that it's always fun to watch what the media does to itself. Well, according to Election Central, this is a news site, very interesting updates constantly on the election, and this is coming from Nate Ashworth. And he says that if the press rejects and opposes the rally, it will only serve to make it bigger. And he's 100% right on that, because, as you know, the media coverage gets amped up. And here's what Mr. Ashworth has to say. If the media wanted to prevent the rally, it should have collectively come out and endorsed the event, praising the president for trying to help jumpstart the economy and show the country that life can go on with some simple changes in place. Instead, the same playbook continues. The media complains about what Trump is doing. Trump does it in spite of the media. Supporters love Trump for spiting the media, and the media complains that they were spited. Wash, rinse, and repeat next week. But anyway, interesting dynamics as we go into the rally itself, and I'm just hoping that it goes off reasonably well. Let's just put it that way.
The number of books that have been written about President Trump, the administration, the politics during the Trump administration, unfathomable number of books out there. And there is yet another book and an author making an interesting projection about the Republican Party.
Yeah, absolutely. David Horowitz, he has written a new book called Blitz, Trump Will Smash the Left and Win. It's already number one in quite a few categories on Amazon. It's called a must-read by the likes of Mark Levin, Mike Huckabee, Dennis Prager. They all loved it. Rush Limbaugh, of course, liked it as well. And I think what has happened here is that he was making a prediction about a possible transformation in the Republican Party itself. And, you know, here's the best way to find out what he thinks is just to read what he wrote. Here's what he said. Traditionally, Democrats have approached politics as a form of war conducted by other means, while Republicans have entered the political arena as pragmatists and accountants. But the siege of Donald Trump has begun to create a new Republican Party, passionate and combative in defense of a leader that they believe has stood up for them, and equally important, who exceeds them in his appetite for combat. Again, this is coming from David Horowitz. And it is, it seems like a cultural moment, perhaps, where Republicans may start thinking, maybe he's on to something. But you have to think about what Mr. Trump said shortly before the, just only yesterday, in fact, on Friday. Any protesters, anarchists, agitators, looters, or lowlifes who are coming to Oklahoma, please understand you will not be treated here like you have been in New York, Seattle, or Minneapolis. It will be a much different scene. That came from a tweet Mr. Trump set out. And also, David Horowitz points out that populism is the term political observers have drawn on to describe this phenomenon of people starting to get a little feisty. He said the energy that populism creates adds up to the blitz that is described in this book. And so I started looking to see if there was any examples of blitz out there, and I found one coming from New Jersey, Women for Trump. How about that? This is a message they sent out to their 22,000 ladies. No more silence. Speak up. We have a nation to save, and this is our time to save it. Again, that came from the New Jersey Women for Trump. And you have to remember, too, that the Trump campaign has raised $255 million for his reelection, and right now Joe Biden only has $100 million, and that prompted Republican National Committee Chairwoman Rona McDaniel to say enthusiasm for this president is through the roof. And let's look at the numbers really quick. This is about that enthusiasm. This is coming from an Economist YouGov poll conducted this week. They find that 68% of Trump supporters are enthusiastic in their president, and only 31% feel that way about of Democrats feel that way towards Mr. Biden. So interesting dynamics, and can't wait to see what happens.
So many of the anti-Trump stories in the media are attributed to unnamed sources, and often the media outlets are burned because those unnamed sources get it wrong. But the New York Times continues.
Yes, we'll take a very short look at the little media analysis. This is actually my media analysis for a change. But the New York Times ran a story this week called, Does Trump Want to Fight for a Second Term? His self-sabotage worries aides. Meaning, you know, they're implying another one of these ideas that he's sitting alone in a room somewhere. But anyway, The report said that President Trump is, quote, acting trapped and defensive, is exhibiting, quote, self-destructive behavior, and may not actually be interested in running for a second term. Again, this is the New York Times. So I read the thing from start to finish, and here's what I discovered. Now, the New York Times, they got quotes from Republican Representative Peter King of New York and also Tom Cole of Oklahoma talking about this. They got a quote from former White House Communication Director Anthony Scaramucci and also a gentleman named Sam Nunberg, who worked on the president's campaign in 2015. And then they had another 10 sources, and every one of them was unnamed. And here is who they credited all these claims to. And this is all verbatim: to some advisors, friends and associates, many advisors, aides, one official, White House officials and others, some staff members, several current and former advisors, and finally, quote, people close to him, meaning President Trump. And I don't know why I pay so much attention to that, but it just seemed to me 10 unnamed sources in one story. I don't know about that.
State legislatures from time to time have a way of enacting some rather bizarre legislation. You got one out of New Hampshire I found quite interesting.
Yes, I did too, Rick. It actually still makes me laugh a little, but this is new legislation that was passed by the New Hampshire State Senate, and it simply says that if you're afraid of catching coronavirus, that is enough to access unemployment benefits even after the pandemic emergency ends. This is according to a group called the New Hampshire Journal up there. If you're curious about Granite State public politics, that's a good place to look. But they point out that the Granite State itself has paid out more than $714 million in unemployment benefits at the moment. But according to David Jouvet, he is the vice president of public policy at the Business and Industry Association up there in New Hampshire. That's their statewide chamber of commerce. He says this allows individuals to be eligible for unemployment if they felt they have a reasonable risk of contracting COVID-19 at the workplace. So I guess that's something to think about, but that's legislation in New Hampshire this week.
All right, so for those that do want to get out and work and rebuild the economy, you've got some numbers?
Yeah, well, actually, I have some good news. I try to find good economical news every week because there usually is some. It just doesn't get reported. This is according to a Gallup poll. It's conducted May 28th through June 4th, so it's fairly current, and it currently finds that 53% of U.S. adults now describe their personal finances as either excellent or good. It was only 49% in April, but now it is 53%. And another third said that their finances were fair, and only 14% say that their personal finances are now poor. And again, we won't go into all the details, but again, that's coming from Gallup poll. It was released this week, so things may not be entirely as bad as they seem. And, of course, Republicans are more optimistic here. 61% of Republicans now say that their finances are excellent or good. So stuff to think about.
It is Father's Day weekend, and you've got some numbers to go with it?
Yeah, and certainly we want to wish happy Father's Day to dads, granddads, stepdads, substitute dads, and all those guys out there who are like a dad to kids. Lots of lots of applause for you, but also lots of goodies for you today because according to the National Retail Federation, we've got a big dad bump coming because they expect Americans to spend $15 billion, that's with a B, on gifts for dad or all the other kinds of dads out there. And the most important item that they buy for dad is clothes, followed by gift cards, personal care items, electronics, tools or gardening stuff, sporting goods, car stuff, and also 75% of Americans will be celebrating Father's Day tomorrow. And on a historic note, made me kind of want to look at where Father's Day came from. And the very first Father's Day celebration in the U.S. took place on June 19th, 1910. And in 1966, it was President Lyndon B. Johnson who issued the first presidential proclamation honoring fathers. and designating the third Sunday in June as Father's Day. But also it was President Richard Nixon who signed it all into law. Let's revisit what Mr. Nixon had to say back in the day. He said, our identity in name and nature, our roots in home and family, our very standard of manhood, all this and more is the heritage of our our fathers shared with us. That's coming from 1972. And one last thing, the U.S. Census Bureau is all in on this as well. They report that there are now 72 million fathers in the United States, 29 million who are granddads. There are 24 fathers who have children under 18. There are 2 million single dads and 191,000 stay-at-home dads. So that's your dad report for today, and happy Father's Day, all you dads.
Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway, Washington Times follower on Harper Bulletin. Thank you, and you have a nice Father's Day weekend.
Thank you. My pleasure, Rick.
6:49, time for a check of the traffic and weather on WMAL. Then we'll talk with Gordon Chang.
In Virginia, traffic looks just fine if you're riding from Dale City and continuing toward the Springfield Interchange. There are no crashes to bring to you right now. 395 in good shape, leaving Springfield to ride to the 14th Street Bridge, even onto the freeway. The outer loop leaving Springfield to the Wilson Bridge in good shape. The inner loop from Springfield to get over toward 66 in the Dulles Toll Road, running clean. 66 is good between Gainesville to the Capitol Beltway as well. And then on Benning Road, eastbound at 18th Street, that is going to be completely shut down for an accident. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMA. Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Some patchy fog this morning, but that'll burn off pretty quickly. Expect partly sunny skies, scattered afternoon storms, and some of those may contain some heavy rainfall. Highs today in the lower 80s. Tonight, storms will come to an end. Partly cloudy, patchy fog, lows in the 60s to near 70 degrees. For your Sunday, Father's Day, partly cloudy skies, isolated afternoon storms, highs in the mid 80s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
It's the Saturday morning update on WMAL on Father's Day weekend. I'm Rick Fowler. Great to have you with us, and great to have Gordon Chang join us. And, of course, Gordon has written the recent pamphlet, The Great U.S.-China Tech War. Gordon, good morning, and a happy Father's Day weekend to you.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Rick, and to you as well.
Gordon, I have been following you on Twitter at Gordon G. Chang all week. And a number of hot spots between, first off, let's talk about China and India. Now, there was violence Monday in the Himalayan border region. Both sides accused the other of instigating it. Deadliest conflict in 45 years as 20 Indian soldiers were killed. Give us the background on this.
Well, Chinese troops have gone south of the line of actual control, which is the temporary border between China and India. So the Chinese troops were essentially on Indian-controlled territory. This was a series of incursions. The Chinese seem to have been building fortifications. There was an agreement for both sides to pull back. The Indian troops were inspecting an area where the Chinese should have vacated. They didn't. There was a melee. Essentially, three Indians were killed, a colonel and two soldiers thrown off a cliff into a ravine, and then the Indian soldiers came back, and then there was a fight. In that fight, another 17 Indian soldiers were killed, 10 were taken captured and have been since released. And there have been a number of Chinese casualties, perhaps as many as 60. So this really is something of great concern, because you do have two nuclear-armed neighbors going at it, and there's a third one in the background, which is Pakistan. This could really get ugly.
Now, what is the issue? Why are they in a dispute, and what is the possibility they would resolve it?
The possibility of resolving their border is pretty remote at this point. China has made it clear that it wants to grab Indian territory and has, over a course of years, been engaged in provocative intrusions into Indian-controlled land. So this is only the most recent of them. But this one feels a little bit different than other ones, Rick. This one feels the Chinese are much more determined to not only grab Indian territory, but to hold on to it permanently.
Well, we've seen China, similar activity in the South China Sea. Let's turn to Hong Kong while we're on this subject. The new national security law for Hong Kong that was recently proposed by China could lead to the establishment of the apparatus of a police state. That, according to the Hong Kong Bar Association. Where do you see this going, Gordon?
Beijing has made it very clear that they're going to take full control over Hong Kong. Beijing promised a high degree of autonomy under the one country, two systems formula for 50 years, and that was supposed to expire in 2047. But Beijing has made it clear that it's going to take over Hong Kong before then. And this is with this Article 23 national security legislation that is now being considered by the National People's Congress. It's at its, I believe, second reading, thereby bypassing the Hong Kong Legislative Council. National security legislation has been very controversial in Hong Kong. That's why Beijing couldn't get it through the local legislature, and that's why they decided that now is the time that they're just going to ram it through the National People's Congress in Beijing.
What does this mean for American policy?
Well, this is another irritant, and it's just going to roil relations between Beijing and Washington. The U.S. has granted special exemptions for Hong Kong on the assumption that it was governed autonomously. So therefore, it's a separate customs area, and we don't apply certain restrictions on licensing to Hong Kong parties that we otherwise would apply to a mainland Chinese entity. It appears that we are going to withdraw those exemptions, as we should, but this has enraged Beijing, as everything enrages Beijing these days. So, you know, you add this to a whole bunch of other issues, and it means that relations are going to become only more testy.
There was a positive note this week, though, between the U.S. and China on the trade deal.
China reaffirmed its obligations under the Phase One trade deal that was signed on January 15th. This was during a meeting between Secretary of State Pompeo and his Chinese counterpart, State Councilor Yang Jiaxu. This occurred at Hickam Air Force Base in Honolulu. That was a meeting where there was supposed to be sort of an attempt to establish a more cooperative framework. That did not occur, except the Chinese did say that they will go forward with the Phase One deal. There had been some doubt about that because Chinese media was dropping hints that Beijing should get relief under the deal, but apparently those relief provisions are not going to be employed by China. Essentially, what China is saying is there's a coronavirus epidemic, therefore it should be entitled to special exemptions. I think the United States says, well, look, you knew about the coronavirus epidemic when you signed the deal. You're not entitled to any relief at all. And so China is now going forward with its purchase commitment under the deal.
Gordon, one of your tweets on Friday, no foreigner in China is safe. No foreigner. That's a very strong statement.
Well, the Chinese regime has moved against foreigners and held them hostages. This was in response to the news that China had charged two Canadians with spying. They're called the two Michaels, Michael Korvag and Michael Spavor. They were taken into custody almost immediately after Meng Wanzhou, who is the daughter of the founder of Huawei Technologies, and indeed she is herself the chief financial officer of Huawei. She was taken into custody by Canadian authorities in late 2018, and the reason is that the U.S. Was seeking her extradition, and Canada honored the American request. That has enraged Beijing, as I mentioned, everything does these days. And so to put pressure on Ottawa, Beijing took those two Canadians into custody and now has charged them with spying. Also, you know, we have seen Beijing restrict purchases of Canadian commodities during this 18 months or so. And this really has put Justin Trudeau, the prime minister, under very difficult circumstances. But this is going to be an ongoing drama until the extradition proceedings are resolved one way or the other.
I want to turn to the rising tensions between North Korea and South Korea. On Tuesday, North Korea blew up a joint liaison office that had been used for the talks between North and South Korea, and very symbolic. It was a four-story building they destroyed. Why the tension now between North Korea and South Korea?
That's a great question that nobody outside of North Korea really knows the answer.
There can be a number of reasons for it. One of them is that the coronavirus epidemic has flattened the North Korean economy, and Kim Jong-un, the ruler there, just wants to divert attention from a pretty disastrous situation. There is just a feeling that the South Korean government has been getting too close to North Korea. North Korea, of course, likes Moon Jae-in, the South Korean president, who's got very pro-North Korea views. But North Korea has always kept South Korea at bay because North Korea needs an enemy. And if South Korea gets too friendly, this is just something that the North Koreans feel inherently subversive. So there could be a number of things that are going on right there. We're not quite sure, but clearly relations have gotten bad. One other explanation that people sometimes come to is that North Korea is just trying to intimidate South Korea, which is always the case, so that doesn't explain why now. And people say correctly that North Korea tries to separate Seoul from Washington, but indeed, that's always the case as well. So that doesn't explain the timing element, which is very important for us to comprehend, but unfortunately, we don't have very much visibility into that.
Headline at CNN, Chaos in the Koreas sees Kim Jong-un's sister emerge stronger than ever. What is happening in the world of Kim Yo-jong?
Well, Kim Yo-jong, the sister of Kim Jong-un, the ruler, clearly has started to exercise power because the statements that North Korea has made, including statements about deploying the North Korean military, come under her name. What is fascinating is that North Korean media is using the term party center for her. And that is a term that has been reserved for a successor to a Kim leader. So there is a suggestion that Kim Jong-un is not well, even though he's only 36, and that they're trying to pave the way for Kim Yo-jong to take over from her brother. Kim Yo-jong, by the way, is considered to have been the most capable of the children of Kim Jong-il, the prior leader. But Kim Yo-jong didn't get the nod because in a Confucian society, she would not have been considered eligible as a female. However, right now, if Kim Jong-un is indeed sick, he probably trusts his sister and only his sister.
A wealth of information this morning. Gordon Chang, thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Rick, and happy Father's Day.
And we'll be watching for you on Twitter at Gordon G. Chang. Thank you.
Thank you.
7 o'clock news is next on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL, a Cumulus station.